Voice Matters.
Hey. Whoa, did you hear my voice?
Oh my goodness. Are you hitting puberty?
I guess so.
How's your week been?
Not a bad week.
Not a bad week.
Yours?
Pretty good.
Well, that's good.
No, there were several things that I was wanting to talk about. For starters, we're going to talk about what you did the other morning when I was leaving.
What I do?
It was so cute, y'all. I was getting ready, and I get up around 4 to go to work in the morning, and Joy is lucky enough where he doesn't have to get up as early as me. So I get ready and I get my stuff while he's asleep, and he rolled over and I thought he was awake, and I was like, I love you, I'll see you later. And he goes, I'm married. And I was like, that is the best answer ever, you know? So I text him later that day and I was like, do you remember this morning? And he was like, no, I was out. Like, I'm about to be. I'm so tired. But he didn't remember it. He was dreaming that some random girl was saying, I love you. So, hands off, ladies. He is taken.
Is that what I was dreaming?
I guess. I don't know. It was just so funny because I was like, I love you. And you're like,
ugly.
I'm married. And then you had sent me this article that I'm very excited about.
Was it about married people?
No, it was about NASA. What's it called? I'm trying to find. NASA explains why aliens haven't come to visit us yet, meaning that...
Because we're an idiotic human race.
We really are. We're the garbage planet. But they were kind of explaining, you know, that we just need to better ourselves, you know, before any of that stuff happens. But what Troy was telling me is that basically NASA is confirming that there is life on other planets, and they know about it. Also, in case you guys don't know, NASA has gotten 24 different priests together, and they are all talking about how the human race would act if, you know, we were to know.
There's really no telling. I mean,
like how we would react, yeah. But the fact that they've got 24 different priests together and are talking about this, it kind of confirms it for me.
Like from different religions or just one religion?
I think it's from different religions. But it kind of confirms it for me, you know, how do we tell the human race that there are aliens and how will they take it, you know? So I found that pretty exciting. I think we're starting to get somewhere with all this, and it's very cool to see us kind of advance and kind of get ready for what's really going on out there, you know? You're not going to say yes?
Nah. You know how it is for me.
I know how it is. So, tonight, we have...
Sorry.
We have a story that, you know, a friend of mine had told us to do, and his name is Scout, and I told him I would definitely give him a shout out because this story is crazy. So, thank you, Scout. And at first, I thought it was like a haunted ritual, and that's what I figured we were doing. But once I started doing research and putting everything together, it's an actual story.
Oh, okay.
So it's a very scary story. And we're going to talk about it a little bit, and then I'm going to go into the story that I found, and it's pretty terrifying. So let's dive into this, and then we'll get to the story.
Okay.
Does that sound good? Okay. It's not entirely clear If the devil's toy box is all urban legend, creepypasta, hints of truth, or completely true. For the purpose of this post, I'm going to go with the middle option. Now, y'all, I'm reading part of an article called Astonishing Legends, and it's a very good article that kind of explains everything. Let's see. Let's go with the middle option. There is something about this story, this type of place, that gets at truth. Now, where is this alleged evil place?
Where?
Northern Louisiana. In fact,
is that where Fantasia is at?
Fantasia is in Shreveport. I don't know where that is.
Louisiana.
I know it's in Louisiana. I don't know if it's northern Louisiana. In fact, its creation was inspired by Clive Barker from the Hellraiser movies. Now, unlike movies, however, this toy box is not something you can fit in your hand or even a room. The devil's toy box is described as a shack. From the outside, it is unappealing and average, but the interior of the devil's toy box is what gives this strange room its lasting reputation. According to several sources, the inside of the shack consists of floor-to-ceiling mirrors, including the walls. No one can last more than 5 minutes in this room. People who have been unlucky enough to stumble upon this room have been hospitalized, driven mad, and run out screaming. The man alleged to last the longest was Roger Heltz, who lasted 4 minutes and 37 seconds. Heltz was, by all accounts, fairly normal. He was a 52-year-old family man and father of three. Sadly, his experience in the room severely damaged him, and since that day, he's been unable to speak. Heltz is the only one of the tales of madness and terror. Dozens of teenagers have been seriously disturbed, horrified, and what lay inside or otherwise unable to last more than just a few seconds inside the attraction. So what happens in the room? According to the legend, if you stood inside the mirror room along for too long, supposedly the devil would show up and steal your soul. In most versions of this story, he did so by flaying you alive. I mention all of this because about 2 weeks ago, I got an email from an 18-year-old girl located in northern Louisiana, who we call Erin. Now, I'm going to stop right there because the experience that I talk about is about Erin, so I don't want to get too far in that. The rumor mill was spinning, so local law enforcement quickly stepped in and closed down the attraction. Even after it was shut down, several teens attempted to visit the property.
See, kids are so dumb. I mean, you know, I mean, honestly, think about how many times that we were spending the night at a friend's house and we were literally probably drunk dying at a friend's field somewhere.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all kids. Definitely not our kids.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're...
We didn't have PlayStations and phones back then either.
Well, I mean... I remember I would stay at a friend's house and my mom would be like, I want you to call me at 11:30 and so I'll know you're in, because we had caller ID. And so we would get back, call my mom from her house, and then we'd leave again. After I was like, okay, mom, we're going to bed, you know, and then we'd leave. So... Yes, kids are crazy, and looking back at some of the stuff we've probably done,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, it terrifies me what kids do. So, let's jump into this story. Let me find it on here. Here it is. And it's kind of a long story, but it's a very good story, because the more I read it, I couldn't stop reading it. It was so good. So... Let's see. The Devil's Toy Box is an urban legend that Savior horror fans will... Is it Savior? What was it? What is
yeah,
that?
Savior.
Horror fans will recognize as the inspiration for the infamous lament configuration from Clive Barker's seminal Hellraiser series. I love those movies. They're so good. Though in reality, the box is not a toy at all, but rather a small room where the floor, the ceiling, and the walls are each composed of one giant mirror. According to the legend, if you stood inside this mirror room alone for too long, the devil would show up and steal your soul. Now, we talked about that. I mention all of this because about 2 weeks ago, I got an email from an old friend asking if I could help out their younger sister, an 18-year-old girl who we'll call Erin, located in northern Louisiana. Like pretty much everywhere else, the place where Erin grew up had its own annual haunted house attraction that went up every October. The attraction was called... It was called Farmer Graves Haunted Orchard, and in the years past, it had been every bit as thrilling as that name suggested, which is to say, not very. So, for the previous Halloween, the owners decided to spice things up by building several new interactive installments, which included a windowless shack called the Devil's Toy Box. This shack housed a small room composed of large wall-sized mirrors. That's how Erin heard it described anyways. She had never been inside the toy box herself. Farmer Graves closed less than a week after opening, a result of the numerous people who had to be hospitalized after going inside the Devil's Toy Box attraction. Erin didn't get a chance to try out the box for herself before the closure, but she had heard countless stories about it from her classmates at school. Apparently, no one could last longer than 5 minutes inside the room. There was even a larger time set up beside the building. There was even a large timer set up beside the building that showed the current occupant's length of stay under a second clock displaying the longest recorded time up to that point, which maxed out at just over 4 minutes before the attraction finally closed. One woman suffered a heart attack after just 90 seconds inside the box. A 17-year-old boy had to be dragged out kicking and screaming, and the boy was from a nearby parish and hadn't gone to Erin's school, though her friend Celeste claimed her parents were friends with the boy's mom. They went to his funeral when he killed himself 2 weeks later. Whatever the truth of the matter, town officials were quick to act in getting Farmer's Grave shut down. Of course, that didn't stop people from talking about the now infamous attraction. Which they began to do almost immediately. For the next month or so, it seemed like the toy box was the only thing on anyone's mind. It had become the stuff of legend, and of course, it didn't take long for the local kids to start venturing out to the orchard and not to see the box for themselves. Farmer Graves' haunted orchard was owned by a middle-aged couple named Will and Darlene Sawyer. When the town council ordered the Sawyers to shut the place down, they were so pissed about the ruling, they left most of the attractions still standing, including the Devil's Toy Box. The actual orchard was on a plot of land located at the rear of the Sawyers' property and was only accessible by a narrow two-lane dirt road. One night, several seniors at Erin's school snuck out to the Sawyers' property on a dare and claimed they found the toy box's entrance padlocked. But then, Will Sawyer showed up out of nowhere and asked them if they wanted to go inside. Will's sudden arrival had startled the young men, but once they realized that he wasn't mad at them for trespassing, and in fact seemed genuinely happy to see them, the guys decided to take him up on his offer and to have a go inside the box. Of course, they chickened out as soon as Will unlocked the door, and it seemed to swing open on its own, like a hungry mouth at the sight of food. That's how the rumors about midnight screenings of the Devil's Toy Box began to circulate. Most of the people who ventured out there afterwards claimed they encountered Will Sawyer after waiting beside the toy box for an unspecified length of time. A few even said that they went inside the box, but these claims were always dismissed as bullshit. No one came out of the box that was coherent enough to talk about it. Last week, Erin's boyfriend Troy
hey,
went out there with some of his idiot friends, and Erin hadn't seen him since. His parents reported him missing, and Erin even told the cops about the rumors surrounding the toy box, but they barely seemed to be listening. Now, Erin was going crazy worrying about Troy, and of course, she was hoping I would be intrigued enough by her story to come with her to investigate Farmer's graves because she was too scared to do so by herself. Erin's location was only a 3-hour drive from New Orleans, so I asked my friend Jason and his girlfriend Gretchen to take the ride with me. This way, I wouldn't feel so weird about driving all the way to see an 18-year-old girl I didn't know. We rolled into a town at about 5 p.m. that Saturday and met up with Erin at the McDonald's, as she called it. I laughed when I first heard her say that and immediately felt like an asshole for thinking it was funny that Erin's town only had one McDonald's. Our meet and greet started out a little awkward on account of all the stares we were getting from the rest of the restaurant. Then again, 4 strangers driving into town to meet a teenage girl at the McDonald's will do that. Thankfully, Gretchen was there to defuse the situation with one simple question. Did you make that? She was pointing at Erin's backpack, which was actually a stuffed doll that I recognized as Limpy Space Princess from the cartoon Adventure Time. Side note, that is one of my all-time favorite TV shows. Only most of the stuffing had been removed and a purple pouch had been sewn into it that sealed closed via a matching purple zipper. The straps were made out of old retro-looking seatbelts. Erin nodded and Gretchen's jaw dropped. Oh my God, will you make me one? Will you make me two? Gretchen asked. Sure, as long as you provide the supplies, Erin said. Deal. Gretchen was grinning ear to ear as she turned to face me. You have to help this girl so she can make me my tiny, adorable backpacks. It was a little after 10 when we neared the end of the narrow dirt road that led to the Farmer Graves Haunted Orchard. We parked beside a tall wooden archway that designated the orchard's front entrance. I handed out flashlights from the small stash of them in my trunk, and then we started inside. The place looked about how I expected it to. A row of brightly colored plywood shacks lined the vacant field beside several rows of satsuma trees that had been covered in fake cobwebs and scary decorations. Each shack had a sign displaying the name of a different attraction. There was Horn Toss, which was a ring toss game where you tried to throw halos onto a demon's horns. Werewolf Bowling, which was anyone's guess. My personal favorite, The Exorcist, which was a mounted squirt gun game that had several wooden cutouts of Linda Blair's face as its target. Cartoon water tanks were painted below each of the mounted squirt guns that were labeled Holy Water. The Devil's Toy Box was the last shack in the row. It was painted a bright fire engine red, and the door, which made up one entire wall of the small structure, was padlocked shut. Someone had stacked a dozen or so rusted folding chairs against the side of the toy box. Erin grabbed one of the chairs and began to unfold it as she said, "Now we wait." "How long?" Gretchen asked. "It varies, but hopefully not forever." Erin motioned to the thick patch of wilderness to our left, and I turned to see a window glowing out there in the distant darkness. "See it? That's the Sawyer house. They must know we're here." "And that's a good thing?" Gretchen's tone was tense, and she had a look on her face that said she just realized how much she didn't want to be doing any of this. Before Erin or I could answer, she turned to Jason and asked, "Will you take me back to the car?" Jason gave her an irritated look. "Why?" "Because all of this just got too real." "You knew what we were coming out here to do. I explained it to you in vivid detail." "Jason, please." "No, it's bullshit, Gretch. You do this every time. I know. This is the fucking Avengers sneak preview all over again."
Wow.
"I miss everything cool." He seems irritated. "I'm sorry." She batted her eyes as she gave Jason an adorable frown Gretchen had honed over many years of getting her way. Jason let out a sigh and handed him the keys to the car. "I'll be right back." I pulled out a chair and took a seat next to Erin as we watched the beams from Jason and Gretchen's flashlight shrink off into the darkness. A thought came to me just then. As if this didn't already resemble an episode of Scooby-Doo, now we're splitting up and just asking for it. As soon as the words crossed my mind, we heard the crunch of approaching footsteps. Erin and I stood in unison and exchanged a panicked glance before turning to face the forest bordering the orchard. A middle-aged man with long, scraggly hair emerged out of the darkness into a range of our flashlights. He was holding an electric lantern and wearing an open bathrobe over dirty white over a dirty white undershirt and sweatpants. Will Sawyer was basically Vincent Price if he had starred in The Big Lebowski. He smiled and gave us a thumbs up as he said, "You here for the box?" "Sort of," Erin responded, and Will gave her a look like he had no idea what that could possibly mean. "Have you seen this guy?" I held up a photo of Troy that Erin had texted me to my phone. As Will started to approach us, he squinted at the picture.
"It's been hot."
"Maybe," he said. "When was that?" "A few weeks ago. He was the one that went into the box. Most won't go inside anymore. Lasted almost 3 minutes, then he ran off screaming." Erin let out a sharp gasp. "Ran off? Ran off where?" Will pointed a thumb back at the dark patch of wilderness behind him and replied, "Into the fucking woods. Where do you think?" I opened the door and he came shooting out, naked from the waist down. Had his boxers on his head and his pants wrapped around his neck like a scarf. It was honestly pretty funny. Erin covered her mouth with her hand and her eyes began to well with tears. Will grinned and said, "You want to see inside?" "We aren't here for the box," I said, stepping in front of Erin and glaring at Will. "But it's so breathtaking," the man said as he gestured toward the toy box's wide door, which slowly swung open. The interior was shrouded in darkness, but I could still see something vaguely human-shaped moving around inside the box. Yeah, fuck that. "Run." I grabbed Erin by the arm and pulled her along with me, and I sprinted away from the toy box. I could hear something chasing after us as we ran back toward the orchard's entrance, and I say something because it certainly didn't sound like a person. What I heard weren't footsteps, but rather one long, scraping sound, accompanied by wet breathing that reminded me of a panting dog. Jason heard me screaming just as he and Gretchen reached my car. They turned to spot me and Erin running towards them with identical expressions of pants-shitting terror. Jason must have caught a glimpse of the thing. Jason must have caught a glimpse of the thing chasing after us too, because his own face went pale. He quickly unlocked my car and threw himself behind the wheel, screaming for Gretchen to get in. She hurried into the passenger seat, and the moment she buckled her seatbelt, he started the engine and accelerated toward us, closing the gap in a matter of moments. Jason slammed on the brakes, and as he neared, the car screeched to a halt inches away from us. I went to open the back passenger door, but it was locked. So was Aaron's side. I banged my fist on the window and pointed down at the locking mechanism. Jason mouthed, "Oh, shit." He turned and scanned the door controls on the driver's side, looking for the master switch. The scraping sound was growing closer, but I refused to look back and banged on the window once more. A frustrated Jason finally leaned into the back seat and unlocked the door manually, but by then, it already had me. I can remember something dragging me back through the woods. I wasn't aware of much else beyond the vague impression that I had been stung by an insect with some kind of paralytic venom. I felt a rush of air hit my face as the door swung shut in front of me. Then the lights came on, and I realized where I was. Inside the devil's toy box.
Nope.
The room's construction was actually pretty impressive. The floor was a thick sheet of transparent plexiglass layered over a mirror identical to the ones that made up the ceiling and the walls. With the doors shut, the mirror on its other side was just as seamless as the rest. Thin fluorescent bulbs ran between the crevices where each mirror met next, washing the room and its endless reflection in a pale yellow light. I made the mistake of looking down at the chasm of reflections below me and almost fainted. I shut my eyes and held out my hands, feeling for the nearest wall. I leaned against it, trying to force my head to stop spinning. Someone was whispering my name. "Joel." I opened my eyes to see my reflection smiling at me as it said, "You're his now." I let out a startled scream and backed away from the mirror I was leaning against. Something was moving around behind my reflection. It was hard to see what it was at first, but something was climbing up through the corridor of my reflections, making its way towards me.
Corridor. It's a hallway, Steve.
As it got closer, I saw that something was me. Well, not exactly. His features were blurred, as if this reflection of me had been so far back that its face had been reduced to a distorted mess. That was the Joel that was coming for me. I began to bang on the entrance wall, which felt padlocked into place. I let out a frustrated scream and finally turned to face the thing coming for me, only to find that my reflection had turned to normal. There was no longer a blurry me in the mirror. I let out a reflexive sigh of relief. A beat later, it emerged from the mirror beneath me and grabbed onto my legs. I woke up screaming, and Aaron shot me a look. We were still seated outside the toy box. "Sorry, I must have nodded off," I said. Aaron opened her mouth. She hesitated before replying. "I'm worried about your friends." I rubbed my eyes. "Why? How long have they been gone?" "A while. Almost 30 minutes. I pulled out my phone to check the time, confirming what Aaron had said. "Guess we should go check on them." As Aaron and I started on the path back towards the entrance to the orchard, I nodded in the direction of the Sawyer house. "You think he's going to show?" I asked. Aaron thought about it for a moment and nodded. "I hope so. If not, I don't know what I'll do." I glanced at her, worried that Aaron was about to start crying, but the look on her face was one of stoic acceptance. Just as I realized that I was staring at her, Aaron looked up at me and we exchanged a moment of awkward eye contact. I smiled to try to play it off as I quickly faced forward. It was then that I realized we had lost our way in the dark and had somehow ended up in the dense patch of woods that bordered the orchard. How the hell? I scanned the surrounding wilderness with my flashlight, trying to get my bearings, but I couldn't locate the orchard or any of its accompanying structures in the darkness. Then, after a bit of what I thought I had been backtracking, we found ourselves at the front steps of the Sawyer house. It was a rustic, white, two-story, three if you counted it, 6-foot elevated flood-proof foundation, similar to a lot of the homes in the area. The space beneath the porch was unlit and pitch black, yet staring into it, I could have sworn I saw a movement under there as Aaron gestured at the house. "Guess we might as well say hi," she said. Aaron started up the front stairs before I could even begin to mention the many ways in which that might be a bad idea, and without hesitation, she knocked on the front door. "Shit," I muttered to myself and hurried up the stairs to stand beside her. There was a tense beat of silence, and then from inside came the sound of footsteps across the hardwood floor. The door suddenly yanked open, and a middle-aged woman with gray, streaked hair and the brightest blue eyes I'd ever seen was standing there, glaring at us. This must have been Darlene. "You here for the box?" she said, giving both of us a scan. Stop it. I experienced a moment of intense deja vu as Aaron replied, "Sort of." Darlene leaned outside and glanced around. "You better come in then." Aaron and I exchanged cautious looks as the woman turned and started back inside, leaving the front door open behind her. Aaron responded with a shrug that said, "Fuck it," and then entered the house. As I followed her in and shut the door, I heard something rustling in the bushes outside. "Lock it, please. There's shit all in these woods," Darlene said. The rustling sound grew louder as I turned the deadbolt and it slid home with an obnoxious thunk. We followed Darlene into the den that reeked of weed as she gestured to a half-smoked blunt burning away in the ashtray. "Help yourself," she said. She took a seat on the sofa and muted the large flat-screen TV mounted to the wall in front of her. "Now how can I help you?" I cleared my throat and replied, "We were told to expect Will Sawyer. Is he coming?" "He killed himself last night, so probably not." "Oh my God, I am so sorry," I said. "Yeah, so how can I help you?" "Well," I held up my phone and showed her Troy's picture. "We were wondering if you remember seeing this guy out at the orchard recently," I said. Darlene examined the photo. "Not that I can recall, but I never went out there much after the incident with the toy box. It's my fault that godforsaken room got built in the first place, and every time I see the thing, I want to fucking cry," she said. Erin tilted her head, her tone curious when she asked, "It was your idea to build the devil's toy box?" Darlene slowly shook her head. "No, I was sick, like really sick, and that demon, or whatever Willie summoned, told him he would make me better if we built a room of mirrors and got people to go inside. If your friend went in there, I can tell you one of three things happened. He's either dead, catatonic in a hospital, or out in those woods. The ones that end up out there, something happens to them, like when a pig gets loose and grows tusks. But if it'll help, you're welcome to look for him here." "Here as in your house?" Erin asked. "Yeah." Darlene stood, slid her coffee table out of the way, and pulled the rug aside to reveal a crude hatch cut into the hardwood floor. "Will brought a few of the ones that went in back home. I think he felt sorry for them. Anyway, he kept them down here." The woman pulled open the trap door, and I was hit with a stench that was so potent. I don't know how we didn't notice it when we were outside. It was a smell of human filth. Darlene nodded at me. "You got a flashlight?" I returned the nod and handed it to her. She switched on the light and it aimed down at the open hatch, revealing the upturned faces of four naked, emaciated men. "Any of them look familiar?" One of the men hissed at us. There was more rustling sounds from outside, and then something began to scratch the living room window. Darlene glanced at the window as she said, "You've got them riled up tonight. How long were you out there?" Before I could finish, a filthy hand with impossibly long fingers reached up and yanked me down through the trap door. I woke up screaming. I was sitting outside of the toy box and Jason was seated beside me. He gave me a sideways look and said, "You okay?" "Yeah, bad dream. Sorry." I was still reeling from my nightmare within a nightmare. As I glanced around, something felt off. "Where are the girls?" "What girls?" "The girls. One of them being your girlfriend, Gretchen." "Dude, Gretchen broke up with me like a month ago, remember? Or is this something you're doing for your story?" "My what?" "The story you're going to write about this. You're fudging the details, which you probably should. You're going to make up some fake reason why we're out here, too. Some damsel in distress who needs you to investigate a derelict Halloween attraction. It's definitely a lot better than saying your depressed friend asked you to drive 3 hours to see some rundown shack in the middle of the night where nothing whatsoever happened and your friend shot himself." "What?" Jason slid the barrel of a handgun into his mouth and pulled the trigger. I was sitting close enough that the shot rendered me temporarily deaf. I stood and slowly backed away, my gaze fixed on the crater of blood that had been my friend's head mere moments ago. My own head ringing like a church bell from the large caliber handgun going off next to it. Still, I couldn't look away. Finally, I forced myself to turn and watch where I was going so that I could hurry up and get the fuck out of there. As I started toward the entrance, I glanced back one more time to give my dead friend a final parting glance and halted when I saw he wasn't there. Jason's blood and brains were still splattered across the front of the toy box, but the folding chair where he had been sitting was now void of his slumped, lifeless body. As I stood there trying to figure out where Jason's corpse could have gone, a stream of stagnant, smelling water splattered against the side of my face. I turned to see Jason's headless body draped over one of the Exorcist game's mounted water guns. I'm not exactly proud to admit this, but I froze when I saw him, thinking that Jason had gone full-on undead zombie. Though after almost a minute of me standing there waiting for him to make the next move, I finally realized that wasn't going to happen. What I was seeing was nothing more than a dead body lying on a mounted water gun, which meant that someone or something was out there in the darkness moving around a 160-pound corpse and propping it up on shit simply to fuck with me. This was the realization that finally sent me running. I was in my 91 Jeep Cherokee and halfway down the unpaved dirt road back to the highway when the Cherokee hit a bump that dislodged something from its undercarriage. I pulled over and started to get out so I could take a look at what it had been. And that's when I realized I was once again looking at Jason's mangled body. Moving a grown man's corpse is one thing, but moving it and then wedging it up into a car's undercarriage and the time it took me to get back to my Jeep, that's crazy talk. I really don't like to give this part much thought because the truth is, it's depressing. Real life Jason had been really depressed about the breakup with Gretchen, and I guess I should have seen it coming, but I didn't. And so I went back home and started to write it all down, just as I knew I would. I got about this far when I was interrupted by a knock on the door to my apartment. I opened the door and saw there was a note taped to the outside. There's a package for you in the lobby. It was about 11 p.m. and I was pretty sure the management at my complex had long since gone home for the evening, but I headed down toward the lobby anyway out of sheer curiosity. I started down the steps leading for the first floor of my complex to see Jason's mutilated body leaning against a Coke machine at the bottom of the stairwell. Somehow, they found me. I vaulted back up the stairs, seeing everything in slow motion as I sprinted to my apartment and locked the door. A moment later, the knob began to rattle as someone tried to turn it from outside. I was slowly backing away from the door when something big crashed through it. Through it was no longer my front door, but rather the inside wall of the toy box that suddenly buckled inward to reveal a familiar set of headlights. Jason had crashed my Cherokee into the side of the toy box. I spent 25 seconds inside the devil's toy box. That's how long it took for Jason to run my car into it. Thankfully, the Cherokee was still drivable. Afterward, we promptly got the fuck out of there. I dropped Erin off at her house with an apology, explaining that there was nothing else I could do. Honestly, I don't know what she expected from me. This isn't supernatural. If your boyfriend is missing, you call the cops. I'm going home. Do I feel bad that I couldn't help her? Sure. But for what it's worth, we disabled the toy box and probably saved countless generations of dumb kids from making the same mistake as Erin's boyfriend. The bad news is that doing so has almost certainly scarred me for life. Even as I sit here days later writing all this down for the second time, I'm still worried that it's not over. I'm worried that when I wake up tomorrow, it's going to be in front of the box. And that's the end.
Hmm.
What'd you think?
That's still a big old nope.
Yeah, people do not know if this is urban legend, if it's a true story or what. If you look it up online, there are so many articles about the Devil's Toy Box in northern Louisiana. So clearly it is not there, but they said that last they heard was that a teenager went inside. So it is destroyed now. So what do you guys think? Is it real? Do we have listeners from Louisiana that can tell us about it? But yeah, that story.
Super spooky though.
It was spooky. And I'm sorry, I kept stuttering when I was reading it because it just kept like going like twist turns all through the story. So I was like, what is going on while I was reading it? But yeah, it threw you for several loops. And, you know, there towards the end, you could kind of tell, I guess, that he was stuck in the box. That, no, that,
we need Sam and Dean to go investigate.
So it was a very cool story. I do not think Troy was ever found. But
he was stuck in the box.
He was no, he was running around the woods naked, is what was said.
But then he found a box to get stuck in?
No, probably not. He's still running around those woods naked, I guess. I get where you're going with this.
Where am I going with it, Jimmy? No,
it's fine. But yes.
Good job tonight, babe.
Thank you. Did you like it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and thank you again, Scout, because that story was absolutely amazing. So, awesome job. I did want to say, because you've been, you said Nope several times, and I was like, oh, we got to talk about that movie. We watched the movie Nope last night.
Soaked.
And I have been waiting weeks to see this movie, because it looked, we saw the previews at the theater. And I saw that it was coming on Peacock, so we decided to wait. And it finally came on Peacock, and I watched it the day it came out. I didn't finish it, y'all, because that movie is so bad. I think they showed, like, the best parts in the previews, you know? And the twist at the end, like, when I figured out what was going on, I was like, wah, wah, you know? Yeah. Like, I didn't, I was like, that's awful. So, I turned it off. I was done.
Yeah. I wasn't into it either.
Yeah, it was just really bad. But, you know, it was not for me. You know, maybe it's for other people, but it definitely was not for me. I did not like the twist very much. But I hope you guys enjoyed the story, and I hope it gave you some chills, because it was definitely a scary story tonight. And next week, I'm so excited. We will be back with Skinwalker Ranch.
Cool.
And we've got some requests. In case you guys didn't know, I deleted the Velisca axe murder house because it was our second episode and it was very just, it wasn't well done. So I deleted it, and we've had a request to redo the Velisca axe murder house. And I am more than happy to. And we will probably do that after Skinwalker Ranch, because I've already started on that
one. I really like Skinwalker Ranch. I watched that documentary and everything on it. So
I thought you'd be pretty excited about it. There's just, I really wanted to do it tonight, but there's so much that goes into that story. I want to make sure I get it right and accurate, and I want it to be good. So, I needed another week to work on that, but we are definitely doing that next week. So,
cool.
You guys get ready for that, because there's a little bit of everything in that story.
Also, speaking of next week, is Thanksgiving. So, I know a lot of people are going to have short weeks. And it is a major holiday before Christmas. But I know everybody out there is, you know, a lot of us are struggling. Higher prices on everything. Just, you know, just be thankful. And remember what Thanksgiving's for. Be thankful for what you do have.
Absolutely.
And thankful for Jennifer's podcast.
Well, this is our podcast, well, not Jennifer's podcast.
Well, I wanted to be nice. I didn't want to talk about having to carry it.
But yeah, guys, it has what Troy's saying. It's been a tough few years. So be thankful for what you have, what you still have. And just celebrate that and love each other, because that's what we have right now, you know?
Yep.
So everybody be thankful. I'm thankful to all you guys. Y'all are wonderful.
Be safe traveling.
Yes. And we love you guys so much. And we hope you guys have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. And we will see you on Sunday. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Stay hydrated. Make good choices. And have a great rest of your week. Bye, guys.
Bye.